Golf Smarter Premium, number 515, published on November 17, 2015. Greater distance, more consistency, and don't call this swing stack and tilt with Jim Venetis.
This is Golf Smarter Premium. Here's your host, Fred Green.
Welcome back to the Golf Smarter Podcast, Jim.
Right on, Fred. Let's have some fun.
I think this is going to be a blast. Now, I see that you're back in the cabin in Maine, huh?
I am. I flew in this morning from Nevada.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
So are you far from an airport? Where you're like in the boonies, though. You're way out there, right?
Well, you know, Maine is the boonies.
Yeah.
So they do have airports. And, it's not so hard to travel in and out of here.
And is the weather, I mean, is it turning into winter or is global warming killing it? Yeah, you've got the fireplace. All right, we're all good.
It's chilly. It's sub 30 at nights now.
Yeah. Oh, my.
560 during the day. It's still really beautiful.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Wait for the freeze.
The freeze.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's see. We are here. I want people to know that if they would like to ask a question, it's a very simple process. All you have to do is type Q/ and then type in your question. And just like it's explaining on that little GIF right there right now here on blab.im, we'll be able to put your question up on the screen so Jim can read it as well. So please, if you have anything, we've got a bunch of people who've already joined us. If you have any questions, I'm going to lock this seat out. I'm going to allow you to join us on video in a little bit. I know that there are people who have questions here. I'm really excited to hear what they have to ask you. But I want to get started with my game. When we first started talking, I injured myself. I couldn't play for at least a month. It was like six weeks. And so you were excited about that because you felt like this would be a perfect time for me to learn this setup. So you've got a unique style of teaching golf, a unique swing. Let's go over it briefly again to the people who are here can be introduced to what you're doing.
Yep. In the simplest way, it's just a matter of pre-setting the movements for the swing in the setup. And so if you could, all that's required to hit a proper golf shot and to have power and to have the ability to control your trajectory and to shape the ball is simply that you keep your weight on your front foot and that you're shoulders are closed through impact. It's simply those two components that I preset in the setup so that during the swing, you don't have to worry about the movements for the swing. You don't have to worry about where your hands are going. You don't have to worry about the rhythm, tempo, and timing of the swing. You can just hold your position, which just means holding your weight still. And if you hold your weight still, you know, the ball doesn't move. So there's no reason for you to move. So if you hold your weight still and the ball is still going to be in that original position, that means you're going to return back to that original position. And since we're pre-setting so that your weight is on the forward foot and that your body is closed, you get the benefit of that position. And should I explain what the benefit of that position is?
Oh, we always want to know the benefits. How else are we going to buy in?
Solid contact and a tight draw ball flight. So contact is a product of the position of your weight. Your weight determines the bottom of the arc for the swing. So if you keep your weight on your front foot, that means you're always going to descend down through the ball, no matter what you try and do during the swing. If your weight is on your front foot, you're going to have a descending blow through the swing. The difference between a pro and an amateur is that a pro hits down on the ball. He hits the ball first. The funny thing is, though, that when an amateur tries to do that, they often find it very difficult to accomplish that. And it all comes down to the position of the weight. And then the second component is the closed shoulders. When you close your body down, you swing on an inside-out swing path. The inside-out swing path has so many benefits. One, it creates a draw. Two, it reduces spin on the ball. By reducing spin, you're actually adding power. But here's the fun part. By reducing spin, you're reducing how much the ball can spin offline. Mm-hmm. So it's not just a directional thing. It's also, it maintains a tighter margin for error. So by being closed, you control your path. By being on your forward foot, you control your contact. Path and contact are all you need to play well. And the fun part is, during the swing, all you have to focus on is staying still. We do the work in the setup. It's the setup where you should take your time and be very thoughtful and mindful about the position that you're getting in. And then over the ball, during the swing, you just have to stay still. Does that sound like what you're experiencing right now?
Yeah, it is. As a matter of fact, when I was showing a buddy of mine on Saturday when we were playing, he said, it seems like there's an awful lot of moving parts. And I'm saying, no, it's just the opposite. There's few moving parts. The problem with a normal golf swing is there is so many moving things. There's so many different things to think about. You make yourself nuts. And the idea of stillness, about rotating around your front, making the axis, right, your front foot versus your spine,
right,
reduces the amount. See, I'm learning. Reduces the amount of movement that we actually do have.
I'm so proud of you. You've been a really good student. What you've done in the last 6 weeks, 7 weeks has been great. Not only did you take the opportunity to try and learn this, but you really followed the program. You know, you started small. Because you were injured, yeah, you didn't go hit balls. You just worked on your mat in your driveway and kept it a very controlled scenario,
right,
so that you could focus more on the position and not get too obsessed with the ball. People get obsessed with the ball. And they try and hit it far, and they try and focus on how to hit it and control it. If you can control the position of your body, then you can control the ball.
You talked about getting more consistent contact, which it should be the thing that everybody gets excited about. Because I think that when people go to golf instructors, at least what I've learned from doing all these interviews, is they want more distance and they want to be consistent.
Sure.
And so, obviously, you want to be consistent, but I see people all the time tweaking throughout the round. Oh, I got to back off. Oh, I got to. It's like, how can you possibly be consistent when you're changing everything all the time?
So true. And that's just the plague of what golfers go through. And it's well intended. Golfers are trying to figure it out. And so they get a sensation, they get a feeling, they get an instinct, they hear a tip, they read a tip. And so they chase after it, trying to improve their games. But first off, if you just focus on the same thing every time, even if it's wrong, if you just focus on the same thing every time, at least you have an opportunity for consistency. Mm-hmm. Now, if that thing is correct, not only do you get consistency, but then you get this high quality ball flight, you get confidence, and you get all the benefits that come from being in this left dominant position, this forward dominant position.
Right, right. Do you find that this appeals more to middle to high handicappers, or do low handicappers? I mean, because it really is a radical change in what you've been doing for a long time. And people who are low handicap, single digit handicap players, I don't think they would want to make as dramatic a change as this is.
You know what's cool about low handicappers is they're low handicappers for a reason. They're really good.
They
golf
play all athletes. The time.
Well, that, but they're also good golf athletes. You know, they've experienced a lot to get to that level in the game. Mm-hmm. Consequently, they're very easy to teach. So, you know, one of my closest friends used to play on the Nationwide Tour. I got him to make this swing within 10 minutes. I have another student that's a mini tour player who is able, you know, good golfers can make any swing. So it's just a matter of directing them properly, and then they'll have the opportunity to experience the quality of the ball flight, the quality of the contact. So low handicappers take to it very quickly. So I actually, all my students, I have all the way down to a plus five handicap, all the way up to, you know, a 30 handicap. And that 30 handicap is a new student who's on his way down to be in an 18 handicap. But the low handicappers take to it quite quickly because they have the athleticism and the wherewithal. You know, I'm able to talk to the low handicapper with a different vernacular. I mean, because they've already hit this shot. I'm just going to make them realize that every shot should be hit from this position. This shot that a low handicapper would associate with is when they're trying to knock down a wedge. They're trying to take spin off of a shot. You know, it's Tiger's stinger that he used to hit. It's something that good players do as a part of the shots that they need in order to play well. So what I do is I say, you know, that shot that you hit that's a real tight draw and it's got that penetrating ball flight and you're not moving your weight. And they say, yeah. I say, that's where every shot should be played from. And so they can jump into it quite quickly. So really the difference is between students is who's committed. You were committed. And that's why you've had some really nice progress and success with it, because you just followed the path. It's different, yes. But it's just a matter of once you start to experience the quality of it, different becomes a positive thing. Because what's different? You don't have to worry about slicing the ball anymore. You don't have to worry about contact anymore. You don't have to worry about rhythm, tempo, and timing anymore, or the movements of your hands and arms. So the difference is a big relief. It's a very freeing experience once you can embrace the difference.
It was very fun because while we were on the course, my friend was like, you know, he was just amazed. I hit 13 fairways on Saturday, and he was amazed how he said, wow, you are really hitting the ball with confidence. And I'm like, I've just started this 6 to 8 weeks ago. I don't know if I'm that confident about it yet, but boy, it feels good.
Yeah, and there's multiple components to this. You know, confidence is something that is a product of experience. So once you experience the quality of strike and the ability to do it, now confidence goes up. But also because you're playing with this very simple swing and it's easy to execute, now you have an ease of performance. So there's multiple things that are in play here that allow you to really get the benefit of the swing. Yeah, confidence is a great one that becomes a byproduct of the experience of hitting the great shots.
Right, right. I want to remind everybody that if they do want to ask a question, and I'm talking to you, John, please do it by typing Q and then a slash. You see, I have instructions on there. Q slash, then type your question. That way I can put the question on the screen so that Jim can see it as well. And everyone can see what your question is. So if you wouldn't mind, John, just typing it in one more time, we'll get to your question and anybody. And it, let's try it again. Go lower Q. What is it? How does it say? Oh, no, I'm sorry. It's slash Q. My bad. And I have to read my own little GIF here. So slash Q, then your question. Yeah, that works. So let's see here. Let's go to answer question. And there you go. John Pappas wants to know, if we're staying still, then what is the first move in the takeaway? Or do you even call it a takeaway?
Sure. The club gets taken away as a product of the position that you're in. This is part of the freeing experience of it. Once you set your position, you're pre-setting the movements for the swing. So once you get closed and once you weight the forward foot, whatever you do on the takeaway, if your hands or your wrists break or if your hands come away flat, it's correct because it's according to the position that you've set. So you get this great freedom where you don't have to worry about what your hands and arms are doing. You don't have to make some specific and precise movement to take the club away. Just take it away because you've already done the work in the setup. By pre-setting yourself, you've already, because see, our body is very specific. And as you set into the position, you're setting how your hands and arms are going to move in the swing. It's you know, the way you grip the club already predetermines how the club is going to go away. So by pivoting into your forward side and then taking your grip, you can blindly take the club away and the club's going to go away according to the position of your body. So it doesn't have to be something that you have to micromanage. Just take the club away. And while you're taking the club away, if you stay still, the club's going to return right back to where it started from. If the club returns right back to where it started from, you have the value of the position that you're in. And that's how you modify and learn this swing too. That's another benefit of this. If you stay still in your setup position and you take the club away in whatever manner you wish, whatever feels comfortable to you or whatever you wish to do, just let the club go away. You read your ball flight, and if contact is a miss, then you know that your weight has moved. If your direction is a miss, you know that your shoulders have opened. So in the next swing, you respond to that, you react to it, you get more weight to the forward foot if your contact is off, or you get more closed if your direction is off, and then once again you blindly take the club away. It's kind of like a funny thing, you know. Pros don't micromanage. PGA Tour pros don't micromanage the swing as they take the club away. They take it away in a very natural way because of years of playing the game. Right. But it's also because they know better than to try and micromanage or overwhelm the swing with some sort of a movement. Now, what amateurs tend to do is they watch the pros' movements and they try and replicate those movements. Those movements are a product of their position, not so much a product of their intention to move the club one way or another. And so it's really it's almost a misperception or a misunderstanding that you should try and take the club away in a very specific manner.
I love talking about this now because whenever you're seeing friends, they want to talk about golf. Somebody said, well, it sounds like stack and tilt to me. I would love for you to respond to that.
Well, stack and tilt is actually quite different. The only thing that's similar, that this is similar to stack and tilt, is that we weight the forward foot. But then stack and tilt does a couple things that are different. One, they ask you to micromanage a few positions throughout the swing. So, yeah, they weight you on your front foot, but then they tell you to do a series of movements throughout the swing that are actually quite difficult to do. And those movements have you then striking with your right arm. So you weight the left foot, you weight the forward foot to then strike with the back arm. That becomes a rhythm, tempo, timing thing. So that alone right there, the fact that they're managing movements completely distinguishes the swing that I teach from stack and tilt. But also, like I said, they weight the forward foot, but then they strike with the back arm. So the only thing that's similar is that they weight the forward foot. They don't close down their body. They don't take a pivot and then grip. They're just putting weight on the front foot. And anytime you put weight on the front foot, you're going to have some benefit for it. So stack and tilt has, you know, that the point that they weight the front foot has some merit. But after that, there's a lot of other things that occur that sort of diminish the value of being on that front foot.
You can see that John asks, it sounds kind of like darts. We lean on the front foot and stay in that structure.
And that's a lot. That's one of the analogies that I give. You know, you preset throwing the dart by leaning into the front foot and raising your arm and reducing the movements down to the least common denominator. You want as few hinges as possible. So, yeah, it's like darts, except for the dynamic of throwing a dart is much simpler than the dynamic of hitting a ball 300 yards to a target that's this big.
Yeah.
So there's more to it than that. But, yeah, it's got the same simplicity. That's definitely, in darts, you're presetting. When you're shooting a free throw in basketball, you're presetting. When you're shooting an arrow with a bow, you're presetting. So it has that similarity between those other skills.
And I love the fact that you really enjoy bringing in other sports and making those analogies and comparisons to make it so much more relatable for everybody. And here John says that in a precise game like golf, the less movement, the better. But with this swing, it's not a precise game anymore. I mean, there's not as many things going on in the swing to make it precise, right?
Yeah, you have a great freedom. There's a great luxury. And the cool thing is like I said, you just have to have a majority of your weight on your front foot and your body has to be closed through impact. The ideal is to have 70% of your weight on your front foot. But if you have 51% of your weight on your front foot, you're going to be experiencing solid contact. If you're just slightly closed through impact, you're going to be experiencing good ball flight. Now, we want to get to the ideal where your weight's 70% on the front foot, so that way your margin of error is greater. And you want to be closed enough so that even if you make a mistake, you're still closed on the way through. And that's why I really encourage a deep pivot onto the front foot, so 70% of the weight comes to the front foot, and the body is closed at least 20 degrees compared to what the traditional swing would put you at in a neutral setup position.
I'm going to switch questions here. We have one from Sal, but another one just came in. Sal, we'll come back to your question. Kevin wants to know, even with the driver?
Even with the driver. Yeah, there's no reason why you wouldn't make the same swing with every club. You change ball position to accommodate for the different lofts. So with driver, you put the ball at the bottom of the arc, just before the club's going to bottom out. So that way you're not hitting straight down on the ball like you would with a wedge. You play it off the inside of your left heel which puts the bottom of the arc just slightly ahead of the ball. And so that way you're catching it at a real shallow point in the arc. So that way the low lofted driver is now able to produce a high and powerful shot.
Hmm. Well, John wants to know, and hopefully you can interpret this question because I don't really understand what he means. But so is it like a three-quarter open door slamming shut?
John, tell me more about what you mean by that, because I kind of get a sense for what you're talking about. The hinge for the door is your left side and your arm is the door. So it is like that, where you're trying to hold the hinge of the door still so that your arm will swing along that line. But is that what you're referring to?
Well, he says, that was not him. All right. Well, John, you gotta re-ask your question here or see if we can get more in there. So I've been sending you video of my progress, and I was out on the range. Now, the first couple videos that I sent you was on a range hitting off of a mat. And boy, I was getting a beautiful draw. Everything was just working. But I was hitting off of a mat. And then I sent you video this weekend where I was hitting off of grass at the range. I think you answered John's question. He said exactly my point. And so I sent you video, and after I sent you the video, then I looked at it because I went to the golf, you know, and played 18 after that. But I looked at the video later. I was shocked at how open, right? No, I was closed. Wait.
You were closed. I
was closed.
Intending to be.
Right. And that my shoulders, and, you know, you can, if you want, stand up because I think you have enough room there. If you want to stand up and show us what you're talking about rotating onto your front foot. And this is where you really need the practice to see what he's doing. So why don't you explain what you're doing right now, Jim?
All I'm doing is I'm just pivoting my weight onto my forward foot. As I pivot my weight onto my forward foot, my body closes down and my weight comes to my front foot. So by doing that, I'm closing my body to create an inside-out path, and I'm securing the position of my weight. Super simple.
But go back to that spot, because I want to see where I'm missing my point here, because I feel like I'm rotating onto my front foot, that I've got a lot of weight, but I'm struggling with where do my hands go, and then once I get my hands where I feel like they're in the correct or a comfortable position, all of a sudden, my shoulders are now square again.
Okay, so as you pivot, your hands and arms pivot too, right? So as you pivot, that's why I say pivot, then grip. If you pivot, then grip, now your hands go onto the club exactly how your body is. So it's relying upon the setup position to create the action in the swing, to create all the precision in your hands and arms. All comes from once you pivot, then you grip. Notice if I face the ball and I grip, I'm going to have a neutral grip. Mm-hmm. If I pivot, then grip, I have a strong grip. And that's what we're looking to have. We want a strong grip here because it's the strong grip that's an indication of being in your forward side. And it's a strong grip that creates power. Good ball strikers always have strong grips.
Right. And your shoulders.
Go back.
Or maybe you can do it this way. But I see that your shoulders are at a extreme angle like this, where I kept seeing mine do this when I was watching video.
You're actually not far off. And if you look at the comparisons that I make between us, there's a lot of similarities between you and I. I'm not tilting my shoulders this way. Mm. Once you pivot, your shoulders fall into a position. Wherever that position is correct. So the pivot dictates how much your shoulders are going to be at an angle. Your pivot dictates where your hands and arms are going to be on the club. So it's really just to rely upon the pivot in order to get into the same consistent position. Now, there was a question earlier that Sal asked and said, how long does it take to accomplish making this swing? I would like you to answer that question. Tell everybody how you've been playing and what you've been going through.
Well,
and just, what is it now, 6 weeks?
Six, 8 weeks. Yeah, I mean, we started around September 1. So here we are in November. So I'm a couple months into it. I've played three rounds since, and I shot 82, and then I had a 90, and I'm like, okay, do I really want to keep doing this? And I'm like, yes, I do. and went out and shot another 82. And then actually this weekend shot an 80. And I was really excited because in the 18 holes, I hit 13 fairways. I hit 13 greens in regulation. I hit about five fairways, but my misses were really close. They were just off on the fringe on left or on the right. One shot I had just went, it didn't turn at all. It just went straight, but it went right because I was pointing that direction. I was like I said, I made 13 greens in regulation, and that's a shame that I just can't putt.
Well, and that's all part of it. Think about it. Once you can get this swing down, then you can start to focus on the other disciplines of the game.
Right.
You get to stop to take the swing for granted. So then you can put that same time that you've put in the last 6 weeks, you put that into your short game. So now then your ball striking will be what it is now, because all you have to do is stay still. It's not like it's something that needs to be constantly maintained. And then you can start to focus on the other skills of the game, and everything starts to catch up. You know, I think the average golfer should be a 6 handicap. And the reason why I believe an average golfer just means, you know, if you play once or twice a week, you should be able to be a 6 handicap really quickly and without too much effort.
Okay, once or twice a week, but you're playing every week, right?
Okay.
And getting some practice time in.
Yeah, I mean, the average golfer, isn't the average golfer kind of playing weekends once or twice a week? You know, the average golfer who's really dedicated and devoted. You know, I got a lot of students that play every day. I have a lot of students that play 3, 4, 5 times a week. So, you know, I think once or twice a week is a kind of a very minimal amount of time put in, and you can still be a 6 handicap. Because once you get the swing down, then you get to focus on your short game, you get to focus on putting, and then your confidence goes up, and then all things start to kind of meld together where you have more skills than just the ability to strike the ball.
You can answer the question we have on the screen from Kevin right now about where you're based, because I can't keep up with you.
Yeah. Well, you know, I'm bi-coastal right now. You know, I've spent the majority of my life in California, but I also come back to New England, and I've spent this year, you know, this is something you profiled in the podcast. I drove cross country teaching students. I ended up in New England, and I've stayed here because I've had a lot of requests for for lessons back here. So I thought, since I'm here, I ought to take the opportunity to teach these people on the East Coast. And then, you know, based upon weather, I'm headed back west. But, you know, I'm a mobile golf pro.
Yes, you are. And as you drive cross country, people get in touch with you, and you'll stop, right? You'll go and do it. So a best way to do this is he's Jim Venetis, golfacademy.com. And you see the spelling on the screen. V is in Victor, E-N-E-T-O-S. Jim Venetis, golfacademy.com is where you can find him and track him down. Now, this is there's a couple of questions that I really want to get to, but let's stay on the weight transfer. From Steve, he wants to know, when you transfer your weight to the lead side, where on the foot do you feel the weight? So are you on the heel, or are you on the ball on the side of your foot? And while you're answering that, I'm going to disappear for a second. I want to go get some golf clubs because I want to ask some questions with my club in my hand. So go ahead and answer.
Cool. So in my school, I have hundreds of videos that go into the details of questions like this. Where you want the weight is on the palm of your foot. So I'll show you right here. It's right in this area here, not on the toe, not on the heel. It's just grounded right into what would be like the palm or the ball of your foot. That's just a good stable place to play from. If you're on your toe, you're going to lose balance. If you're on your heel, you're going to lose balance. Right on the palm of your foot. I hope Converse likes this.
I thought they sponsored you, man. You're always wearing the Converse. I've never seen you with golf shoes on. I love that.
Yeah.
Oh,
well, it's just not necessary. If you're not shifting your weight, you don't really need spikes to hold in place.
That's an interesting point. Wow. And soft spikes. So I don't have an iron with me. I have what I found in a garage sale.
Look at this. Old Precision. Huh?
An old Precision Orlemar. I'm trying to do this so you can see it. So one of the things that I was recently taught before you and I got together and that I learned is my takeaway, I was just bringing it straight back. right? And not rotating the club at all. And the teacher that I was working with said that I need to, as I'm bringing it back, open it up so it's open on top. I'm hitting the ceiling because of this. So it's hard to figure out how to do this on the screen. So it's opening like sure. that, right?
Opening the club on the backswing, and then you're squaring it up on the way through.
Right. And so all of a sudden, I was hitting a draw with that. Are you saying I don't need to worry about that anymore? That I can just take thinking about my old swing or just what I'm most comfortable with?
Listen, that's how the club does move. Now, if you have to focus on opening the club and returning it back to square every time, now you have to be good at doing that. That means you have to be very precise with the movements of your hands and arms in the club. Mm-hmm. That's the thing that becomes difficult about the game, is trying to control all the precision that happens in the club. Now, what if you pivoted closed? When you pivot closed, the club naturally opens up on the way back. The toe kind of comes around, and then as you stay still, the toe returns back to square. So instead of you having to do it or find a square position through impact, you don't have to worry about it anymore because the setup position already forced that. We want the setup to create the action. So that way, I mean, it's so important to remember, it's not just about defining what happens in the swing. It's about giving the student an opportunity for ease of performance. If you can go on all day about all the minutiae and subtleties of the movements and the rotation of the forearm and the rotation of the body and what the club's doing in the shaft. But if you can't execute it consistently, then there's no point in even paying attention to it. But what if you set into a position that caused all of those things to occur? And that's what I realized with this swing. You know, I have thousands of students that are all able to hit really high quality shots. It's not their athleticism or their attempts to micromanage the movements of the club that have that happen. It's the setup that forces the proper movements in the club. So that way you don't have to worry about it. It's like saying, you know, a race car driver knows that his tires are spinning forward, but he doesn't have to micromanage each rotation of each tire. He just gets to jump on the gas and make sure that he turns and keeps his position on the track proper, because the machine itself is going to take care of all of that. Well, it's similar with the setup position. Our setup position forces the proper movements of the club, which is why you're experiencing such high quality shots. You said just the other day you hit 2 par 5s in two.
Yeah. So I've never done that before in one round.
Right. You're getting big power. You're getting consistency. You said you had to hit this really precise shot between two trees, and it was a target golf shot that you were able to execute.
Yeah.
So maybe if you set up properly, the movements of the club will be proper so that you don't have to worry about them. Mm-hmm. It's a terrible burden to have to think about all the movements that the club experiences during the swing. And everybody knows that overthinking is never a good thing. So instead of just not overthinking for not overthinking's sake, we're not overthinking because we don't have to, because we've already taken care of the movements in the setup position.
I don't want to spend a lot of time on equipment. I don't think it's necessary, but this question from Rick about needing forged irons.
Let's do it.
I think that everybody should be fitted for clubs. Doesn't matter where you are in your game. That getting fitted is going to make a huge difference. And you're not going to believe how much of a difference having the properly fitted clubs for you can be.
It's as simple as this. Your lie angle is really crucial. The club needs to run through the ground level. If the toe digs, the heel comes forward, and even if you make a perfect swing, the ball's going to go to the right. If the heel digs, the toe comes forward, and even if you make a perfect swing, the ball's going to go to the left. We need the club to run through the ground level. Now, since everybody is different, you know, we have so many different body types, to corner everybody into this term of being a standard loft and lie or a standard lie is a bit much. It's like everybody wearing the same size shoe. And of course, everybody doesn't. So because we have different heights, different lengths, arms, different club head speeds, if you get a forged club, it can now be bent. The lie angle can be bent very easily. Cast clubs cannot be bent. So when you buy a cast club, you're just stuck with that lie angle. If you buy a forged club, you can move it 9 or 10 degrees flat or upright to match your specific swing. So it's just a matter of, you know, if you're going to buy a suit, you could buy it off the rack or you can get it tailor-made for you. The cool thing about golf is the price isn't any different. You know, you're going to spend a lot of money on cast clubs. You're going to spend the same amount of money on forged clubs. Buy a forged club so that you can then fine-tune the fit of the club for you.
Jim, I am just so excited about the reaction that the Golf Smarter community has had to your instruction on the shows over the last we had that nice series of four in a row. Matthew just wrote in to say that he joined your online school a few weeks ago and have found it utterly amazing, which is quite a testimony. Thank you, Matthew, for saying that. Now, the stuff that's coming across now, let's get John's question since you did that. Do you find clubs are typically too upright or too flat?
Well, sure, and it's not. There's nothing consistent about it other than they start with just one standard lie angle. Mm-hmm. So it's all relative to your size and your club head speed. Yeah, you're going to have some that are too upright and some that are too flat. The better the player, the more upright the lie tends to be, because the better player creates more club head speed, and as you create more club head speed, you know, a shaft flexes multiple ways, but one thing that it does is it droops, where the toe droops as it comes into impact. The toe comes down like this and the shaft is back like this. So the higher club head speed that you have, the more droop you're going to have in the toe, which means the more upright the club needs to be. So the better players are always going to tend to be more upright. But yeah, you know, there's no right or wrong. Flat or upright is not correct or incorrect other than relative to you. So you want to just make sure it fits you. It's like saying a size 12 shoe or a size 8 shoe. Neither is correct or incorrect. It's just the one that's supposed to fit right. You is the one that you should be wearing.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I love that, you know, you have so many videos on YouTube and you have a lot of subscribers, and we're welcoming all of them here right now. One of the things that you said in one of the videos I was watching last night about the shaft, the flex of the shaft in the swing and how that creates your power. Can you expand on that a little bit?
Well, sure. And this is something I think every golfer's experienced, from, you know, somebody that doesn't play very much and is a high handicapper all the way up to the best players. You have that moment where the ball jumps off the face and you wonder what just happened there. The swing feels effortless and easy. The club has a lightness to it. You know, it feels light and easy to move, but it also has this strength as it comes through. What's happening there is the shaft is flexing. Now, great players know how to flex the shaft. They know how to move the club so that the shaft flexes. Beginners don't necessarily know how to flex the shaft.
Right.
How the shaft flexes is simply by working in a circle. When it works in a circle, it creates centripetal force. Think about Iron Byron, the robot that tests equipment. It makes a circular swing. As it makes a circular swing, the shaft flexes and it gets a very efficient power. If you shift your weight, you can no longer make a circular swing because the bottom of the arc is changing. So you're making a swing that has more of an oval shape to it. Once you're making this oval shape swing, there's no reason for the shaft to flex. And so now you have to muscle it. You have to create power through speed and timing. But when you get the club to work in a circle, a lot of times people experience the shot when they're laying up on a par five or they're trying to hit a wedge, like a three-quarter wedge, and they end up blowing it over the green.
Yep.
Because they're not trying to hit it far. So they're not shifting their weight. They're actually being more stable about things. And all of a sudden the shaft flexes and the ball jumps off the face. And it's like, what just happened there? And they try and recreate it. It's very simple what happened there. You didn't move. And when you don't move, the shaft gets a chance to flex because it's working in a circle. And once it works in a circle, you get all the benefits that come in the shaft. You know, the reason why pros hit it far isn't because they're any stronger than another person. It's because they get the shaft to flex.
I don't want to spend, again, this is not something I want to spend a lot of time on, but it's an interesting question that Steve brings up about what other PGA professionals think of your method.
Sure. You know, it's I'd say it's like 50-50, and it all depends on how much time they put into discussing it with me. A lot of guys say this will never work because they don't understand the technology behind this. They haven't experienced it themselves, or they haven't seen what it can do for a high handicapper that's all of a sudden able to hit tight draws that are really solid. And then there's a bunch of guys that, you know, it's just like on tour. You have good ball strikers and you have bad ball strikers. Good ball striking pros understand this swing. It's because good ball striking pros can relate to the idea of having more weight on the forward foot and working the inside out path. And so this isn't so far fetched. Other pros that are more prone to swinging a steeper swing path or more over the top swing path can't really understand it. So they think it, you know, that there's obviously going to be some resistance against it. But I relate it to this, you know, the mind can't know what the eyes can't see. So there's a lot of good players, you know, and think about it, your best ball strikers all hit out of their forward side on tour. Fred Couples or Jack Nicklaus did, Bobby Jones did, Tom Watson, Louis Oosthuizen. These guys are all great ball strikers.
Didn't Hogan?
No. Hogan hit a lot out of his front side, yeah, for sure. Yeah. And he talks about it in his five fundamentals. Now, the one thing Hogan says is that he wanted five right hands at impact. So he was definitely a left-dominant player, but also incorporated using his right side in it. And it required timing. That's also why he hooked the ball pretty violently. And he played best once he stopped trying to hit draws and just working off of a fade. And that's all because his right hand was participating, I think, his right hand was participating too much in the swing. But there's a great paradox that happens between ball strikers. Great ball strikers are often bad putters. So if you look at it, you know, Fred Couples is a great ball striker. He's a poor putter. It's because he's in his forward side to strike the ball, but he's also in his forward side to putt the ball. And so that's where you start to realize, oh, okay, I want to be in my forward side to strike the ball, but I want to be in my back side to putt the ball. Tom Watson is another great example of that.
One of the things that I would like to address that somebody wrote in about is about taking video of your swing. Even though you have minimal movement and, you know, there's still, it's such a different type of swing. It takes a while to get into this, at least from my perspective. So what it's been invaluable to me because I can't be with Jim is I do take video of my swings from down the line and from in front of me. And I send it to Jim and he sends back to me, you know, when you become one of his students, he'll send it back to you and discuss it with you and what is going on with that swing. So getting the video is critical. And I was shocked to find out that even though I was hitting the ball well, my shoulders were still not as close. I always get these reversed. Closed as I want, right?
Yeah.
Having you explain it to me and show me where the issues are makes a big difference.
And that's because we're working towards an ideal. You know, you've already experienced a lot of quality from this. But, you know, like I said, I think the average golfer should be a 6 handicap. So we're headed down with your handicap. It's only going to get better from here.
That's exciting.
As you said, it takes some time. Sure, it takes some time. You know, you're 6 to 8 weeks into it and you're not doing this just for me, this confidence and this excitement that you're experiencing. It's true and it's real. You're experiencing a distinct improvement, not only in your ability to hit the shot, but in your clarity of what you're doing. You understand now what can cause for good shots and bad shots and what your responsibility is while you're playing. So there becomes this wonderful clarity that happens.
Yeah.
And what I say is this, look, you know, you're going to be playing golf for a long period of time. If you keep searching for a swing or a tip or some magic move that's going to make it happen, it's just not realistic. But if you take a couple months and just dedicate to learning this technique, what happens is very quickly you get to the place that you're at right now. So it takes a while. I think 2 months is a short, or 3 months or 4 months even, is a short period of time to, since you're going to be playing golf for the rest of your life, it's a God short willing. Period of time to go through a learning process in order to gain a real and true skill, something that you can rely upon, something that, that you can understand distinctly. I mean, how often does somebody hit a shot and say, I don't know what I'm doing wrong. What am I doing wrong? I think I'm doing the right thing and it doesn't work. Well, that's not really a part of this swing because we have very distinct purposes that we're looking to accomplish. So it becomes something that you actually can grab hold of. And, you know, there's a learning curve in anything. Right. Some students will get it like this. Some students, it'll take a little bit of time, but all students get it. So might as well try and dedicate to something that has a pot of gold at the end of the rainbow.
And when you talk about micromanaging, you know, what I've noticed is that the most of the micromanaging done on golf swings by golfers are done by those who probably started playing later in life, right? Or, you know, in their 30s, whatever. I mean, because everybody I know who ever started playing as a kid, they don't break it down. They don't think about it, and they hit the ball well, and they're comfortable and confident. I mean, sure. The best way to become a good golfer is start when you're six.
Sure, because you don't have the intention to overanalyze things.
Correct.
You know, and it's well intended. You know, people that are trying to micromanage it, they are would be better golfers. They would be better if it was up to them. So they're trying to micromanage it because they're trying to control this swing so that they can produce good golf and get the enjoyment from it. Instead of micromanaging the movements, just manage your position. If you manage your position in the setup, the movements of the swing are going to be very predictable. And then from there, you realize that how the club moves doesn't really have a lot to do with what you're doing during the swing. It has to do with how you set up. One of the fun things for me is, you know, as students improve, it's a very distinct indication of how you can change the movements for the swing simply by changing your setup position. As you change your setup, you're going to change the movements for the swing. So if you get to a proper setup position, you're now going to have proper movements for the swing. So you don't have to worry about it. The flex of the shaft is definitely creates more power. Now for me, I use an extra stiff shaft because I don't need power. I'm already able to create power just because of my understanding of how to make the swing properly. So the stiffer the shaft, the tighter your ball flight. It's not giving me, I'm not getting as much power from the shaft as I could. If I played a senior shaft, I could hit it farther. But that senior shaft is going to have more flex going on, so I could then also lose some control. So you want to play a shaft flex that matches your club head speed. My club head speed is 118 miles an hour with driver.
Wow.
So I play shaft. You know, once you come down to 106 miles per hour, you want to be playing a stiff shaft. If you're in the 90s for club head speed for driver, then you want to come down to a regular shaft. If you're in the 80s for driver, play a senior shaft. There's nothing wrong with it. But there's an optimal. So the more the shaft flexes, the more power you can create, but the shaft is not as tight. The precision is what becomes sacrificed. So look for the optimal. You know, you only need to hit it far enough to be able to play the golf that you want to play. So if you're not hitting it far enough, yeah, look for a softer shaft. But if you're getting good distance out of the shaft, then you want to not soften the shaft too much to the point where you start to lose control.
You were telling me a story, and we shouldn't name names here, but I know that you've worked with some celebrities. You told me the story about you were watching somebody being interviewed on the Golf Channel, on Faraday's show, and he was complaining about his golf game, and you tracked him down and said, I can help. Do you mind sharing that story? You don't have to name anybody.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, it was just, you know, I could tell from what he was saying in his interview that he had tried many different swing styles. And because of having the luxury of being a celebrity and having access to some of the greatest pros in the world, he'd been to the best teachers in the world and still struggled with the game. And I could tell, and he took the responsibility upon himself personally. He said, it's my fault. I'm not good because I'm not going to be good because I can't do it. And when I saw that, I thought, oh, I could definitely help him. And so we've been working together now for the last 2 months. And he actually told me last week when I went out to LA, he said, I couldn't be happier with my swing. And if I don't get any better than I am right now, I'm completely content. And I said, I'm glad you feel that way. But guess what? You're going to get better. So it's been really fun working with him. And it's just, you know, when I see somebody that wants to play better, I have a resolution for them. I have a remedy for them to be able to improve. And that's what motivates me. You know, I want to help golfers to play good golf because I can see how badly they want to play good golf. And this is such a simple swing that it's not very hard to execute. It's not very hard to understand, and it's not very hard to learn. So it gives me great joy when I see my students hit tight draws that are super flush, and they turn around, they look at me and go, I've never hit a ball like that. And it's like, yeah, now do it again, because you can, because all you got to do is stay still.
And I know that there's so many times where I've had a lesson, worked with somebody and was just nailing the ball by the time the lesson was over. And 3 days later, I go back to the driving range and was like, wait, what happened? How do I do that? And that's what I like about this swing. It's really not as complicated as you would think. And it's easy to remember what you have to do because there aren't 1,000 things you have to remember what to do.
No, you just have to stay still and you have to do the work in the setup.
Right.
One of my goals as a teacher is I want my students to be autonomous. You know, a golfer is not allowed to receive advice during a competitive round.
Right.
So they're on their own. You're on your own. So I want you to be autonomous so that you can make the adjustments and corrections on your own so that you don't need me. I make this joke all the time when I'm teaching. I say, if I die tomorrow, just read your ball flight and recognize that contact is a product of your weight, direction is a product of the position of your shoulders, and you're going to make the adjustment in the setup, and then you're going to stay still. So that way you can have the luxury. You shouldn't need me. Once you get this swing down, we should talk because we want to have a beer and you're going to tell me how many birdies you made, not because you're wondering what do I do? So I just have always found, and you know, I experienced the same thing. I learned from some of the top instructors in the world when I was in high school, and I found it to be difficult. I found it to be confusing. And it just was something kind of like my celebrity student. I felt like maybe I'm not getting something. I'm not understanding something, but I was a really great athlete. You know, I played high levels of other sports, and yet I still struggled with what the conventional swing was. And then once I abandoned that and I played Division I college golf and I had abandoned all of traditional theory, I just worked off of a ball flight. I paid attention to how the ball flew, and I understood how to control the ball flight through the position of my setup. And all I'm doing is just giving other people the opportunity to have that same luxury and that same skill. The cool thing is that the shot that gets produced is a really high quality shot.
Right.
It's super solid. It's got a lot of power on it, and it's a tight draw. And then, you know, some people will say to me, well, sometimes I need to hit a fade. So, you know, how do I hit a fade? Bobby Jones says, sometimes the expert player needs to hit a fade. Bobby Jones hit a draw as a standard shot. He says, in order to hit that fade, the expert player will do intentionally what the poor player does unintentionally.
Wow.
Basically saying to hit a fade, you just make a bad swing. And anybody can hit a fade. Can you hit a draw? That becomes the pinnacle of ball strike. So if you can hit a draw, don't worry about needing to hit a fade because you'll be able to hit a fade. And it's very easy to hit a fade from this setup and from this position. You just hold the face open through impact. And the ball, instead of falling left at the end of the flight, or drawing at the end of the flight, falls to the right. So this gives you the luxury. This gives the average golfer the luxury of hitting draws. My students all hit draws. And many of them have never hit draws before we started working together. And that's a big joy for them. They say, yeah, high five.
No, I'm just raising my hand. I'm that guy. But I'll take that high five.
Yeah. And it's true. You know, it's hard to hit a draw.
Yeah.
So now that you have the luxury of hitting a draw, it's very easy to hit a fade. You just go ahead and make a semi-bad swing, and the ball will fade.
I'm curious, the way you said the ball drops to the right. Now, I've noticed there are, now that it's new for me to be hitting a draw, sometimes the ball is going way out to the right, then it comes around to the left. Then there are shots where the ball has this beautiful flight up in the air. I've unplugged my headphones. This beautiful flight up, and then it just kind of drops down to the left. Is one more preferable than the other? Is one the correct type of ball flight that I'm looking for?
Yeah, the ideal is the tight draw. Now, what's cool about the wide draw that you're hitting is it's a self-correcting miss. It's a miss. But what's it doing? It's, yeah, sure, it's a little wide, but it's working back towards target. So now your misses are pretty decent. And then when you are able, and the cause for that wider draw is just not maintaining enough stillness. There's a little bit of looseness in the position of your weight. So now there's some fluctuation into the width of the draw. When you hold tight with your weight, you get a tighter draw. So what the fun part is both balls end up at the same place. One is a wide draw, one is a tight draw. So you seek out the ideal, but when your misses are, and this is how I refer to it, I say your misses are behaving. When your misses are behaving and trying to come back towards the playing field, come back towards the fairway, come back towards the pin, now you have this luxury where you don't have to be perfect and the ball will still be a playable shot. That reduces the stress on the golfer. This increases confidence. He now knows, okay, I'm trying to hit this shot, but even if I mess it up slightly, it's not going to be too poor.
Rick, I'm talking directly to you over there. I see that you're thanking Jim. I'd love for you to come on and thank him yourself. Just click on the call-in button there, and we'll get – there you go. I really – because I could talk about this forever, but I love getting people who can give me a good testimonial to – you know, it's clear how passionate you are, Jim, about what you're doing, and I love the fact that you're not a golf instructor who's looking to book every hour, but you're a golf instructor – how you doing, Rick? You're a golf instructor that wants to see your students improve, and you just take such pleasure out of it. Hey, Rick, how you doing?
Hey, guys, how are you?
Thank you much for joining us.
Oh, this is great. Wow.
Great to see you.
Yeah,
you too. You're still up in Maine there, right?
I am.
It doesn't look like Cali in the background.
No, it's not. So how long have you worked with Jim, Rick?
About a year and a half.
Really? And
what
was your game like before you started?
A big slicer. Oh, my God. I could slice, but I could play out of just pure guts and determination, I guess it was, just hacking my way around. And, you know, I couldn't get below an 18, really. Now I'm 12 and a half.
Really? Congratulations. That's awesome.
All the time and Jim. And I ruptured a disc in my back. Couldn't play. I was done. Oh. And I'm like, yeah, maybe I'll try. And I saw Jim's swing, and I'm like, that's something maybe I could do. And I went out to the range. I'm not kidding you. I hit draws first day out. And with no twisting, no lunging, all the things that would hurt my back. And, yeah, thanks, Jim. Seriously, oh, it's huge. It's a big part of my life now. So
that's awesome.
Rick was one of my first students to join the online school. Mm-hmm. And so I've only seen him once, which was over the summer as I'm making this cross-country trip. We got together. But before that, we would just work remotely. And he did a really good job of just sticking to the program and really being committed to it. And partially because his back was forcing
him. Right, exactly.
Program. But... yeah. Consequently, you did the work, and that was great. You know, that's what's so fun to see is when you dedicate to it, you get a positive result. And when we played this summer, I mean, I'm telling you, Rick is really nice.
I was really nervous. That was nice.
I'm so glad you're saying that.
I'm like, I definitely gagged several times. That was nerves more than that's in here.
Oh, well, but yeah. I'm really glad that you said that because, you know, worse than being at the first tee at Pebble Beach with 150 people standing there watching you, I would think that after working with Jim on video for such a long time to be able to play with him, you must have been a nervous wreck on that first tee.
It was weird. It was really weird, especially when we were going to go to my course. I didn't realize that we wanted to hit some range balls first, and my Muni course, which is a dog track, has no driving range or anything like that. So you had to go to the country club near me. And all, so everything got sort of bamboozled. but it was fun. Yeah, it was cool. We had, you know, nice heart to heart and all that stuff. It was cool. It was a good time. A couple beers afterwards. That was nice.
It's more information than we need to know.
It's even more.
Yeah, right. And anybody else who wants to click on the call-in button, and if you have a comment or a question, we would love to have you in.
But anybody out there, if you haven't tried Jim, you got to try him. I tell everybody I run into at the range, I go, man, you hit a nice ball. I said, Jim Venetis, you got to check him out, man. He's on YouTube, you know.
Thanks, Rick.
Okay, sure.
Thanks so much, Rick. We appreciate you calling. Yeah. Take it easy.
Good to see you.
How you too.
So another one is somebody saying, let's see, who is this that's talking about here? Noel. Noel, golfing when I'm not a worker bee. So, Noel, you said that you're having a blast with the show. Thank you very much. I hope that you become a regular listener to the Golf Smarter podcast. We're at golfsmarter.com. Unfortunately, you don't have a mic or a camera, but you're able to watch us. And you said that Jim taught you this. You're so glad that you met him. You have a YouTube link here. I'm sorry we can't share it on here. I'm going to go look at it afterwards. And anybody else who's watching can go ahead and click on that. Jim, I don't think anybody else has any questions. And I'm getting ready for dinner myself. It's late at night where you are. Thank you so much once again for coming on to the podcast. This is way too much fun. I learned so much more, even though this is supposed to be simple. They're the subtleties. It's all about the nuance on this, like golf, and the subtleties of it and the nuance. But once you get it, oh my God, you got it. And I don't believe that celebrity at all who says that he's content, because that is not what golfers do. There is no such thing as a content golfer. You can watch any PGA Tour event, and a guy will come in first place, and he'll shoot 17 under par, and he'll say, I was not hitting the ball well that day. It's like, shut up,
right?
It's like, if we could just do close.
The game dangles the carrot in front of all of us, and it's the game that forces us all to improve. That's really what it is. And you know, it's just – through this technology, you have a very real opportunity to gain on it and develop a true and real skill that not only produces a great quality shot, but gives you a sense of confidence and a sense of clarity when you play.
Awesome. Again, Jim Venetis, golfacademy.com. You can find him on YouTube. He's got almost 150 videos on there, and they're really, really interesting, because you cover a lot of territory. But better than that, go to the Golf Academy website, Jim Venetis, golfacademy.com, and seriously consider becoming a student, where you could start sending videos to Jim and he'll get back to you with really detailed explanation of how close you are. Not what you're doing wrong, but how close you are. This is the kind of teacher that he is. Golf Smarter Podcast, golfsmarter.com. If you have any questions for me, you can always write Fred at golfsmarterpodcast.com. And we've been around for 10 years. It's coming up to 10 years. And we have a lot of shows that we've done over that time every single week. So this is episode 516. I guess 520 is 10, right? 10 years of once every week. So that's what we're coming up to. I'm very excited about it. So, Jim,
you do a great. It's really been a pleasure to have these discussions with you. I really enjoy it.
And you are not done, buddy. We're going to have you back regularly.
Cool. My pleasure.
So if you didn't recognize, this recording was conducted at blab.im. And if you'd like to watch it, the video is also available on our YouTube channel, youtube.com/golfsmartertv. And I will put some links to it in the show notes. Each new episode of Golf Smarter will be live on Blab, which allows you to participate with your own questions. And it's so exciting, after 10 years of me just having the conversation with someone, I love the idea of letting you in on it as well. So to receive automatic notification of our next recording time and date, keep your eye on Golf Smarter in Facebook, or follow me on Blab or Twitter at Golf Smarter.